Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to the Happiness Is podcast with me, your host, Bruce Aitchison, and we are back and it doesn't get any bigger and better than this. We're right in the midst of the World Cup. So who do you bring on? You bring on the man that fitted the boiler in my house. And not only that, he goes by one name and one name only. Chunk. Let's get him on. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm good, mate. Yourself?
I'm so excited. I can't believe that I finally got Chunk to sit still and be on the podcast. So, saw you on Sunday for the Scotland-South Africa game. What do you think in the World Cup so far?
It's exciting. Obviously, disappointing on Sunday, but I mean, South Africa are going to be really hard to beat, I think, yeah.
They're just so big and so strong. When we were talking about it, you said to beat South Africa, it's not run them around. You've got to take them on up front. Is there MD you think can do that?
To be honest, no, I don't think so.
Are they your winners? Do you think they're going to win it?
Well, I'm going to say, I want Scotland to win, obviously, but I think anybody that wants to win it needs to beat them.
Yeah. They were too strong, yeah.
Aye.
When you watch it, do you miss it?
I do a bit now. I think when I first stopped playing, I started the business and just kind of had enough of it, to be honest, at the time after so long. But gradually over time, especially the last sort of 2 or 3 years, I've gone back to a few games, getting back into it, reconnecting with people and... when I go and watch it now, sometimes it's a bit, you sort of forgot, it's like a different life or something, but yeah, I do miss it.
Do you feel lucky to have had that life and then be able to start another one?
Oh, definitely, I mean, as I say, it's kind of like two lives, and I mean, I just I had a dream when I was little to play for Scotland in Edinburgh. And, like, I grew up wanting to play for Edinburgh. You know, I went to watch Grand Slam 1990, David Soule, and then ended up playing in the games. And yeah, I mean, it was amazing.
Why rugby? Because where you're from, it's not the biggest game. Football's the biggest game where you're from. But rugby's important to all of those East Lothian tunes.
Ah, definitely. I mean, Preston Lodge rugby's at high school anyway. rugby was always pushed. So, like, I played mini rugby at Preston Lodge, and you're right, it is a right football area as well, but I don't think I was ever going to do much on the football field.
So, when you started playing rugby, who got you into that? Was that family that got you into that?
I mean, my big brothers were playing mini rugby. I started going to mini rugby when I was like 6, 7. I was just training. I wasn't allowed to play, and then it just kind of progressed from there. Eh? It was like I just loved it for the first minute I was there on a Sunday morning. I just loved it. I used to get up at 5, 6 in the morning, get my boots ready and all that, eat my cornflakes. And it just went for there. Eh? Just like as soon as we started, like back then, we'd done contact in that straight away at like 9 year old. And as soon as we started doing that, I was kind of the same my whole career though. I was like never the fittest and all that. Do you know what I mean? But like as soon as I got a ball and like I just loved it, eh? Like running with the ball.
Were you coachable? Were you listening or did you just want to play?
What was that?
Were you coachable?
I think so. I don't think anybody is at that age, though, are they? Maybe not men in rugby. I think as I got older, I started listening a bit more.
What did your mates think when you started to get further? Like, because I'm imagining they kept you pretty honest, but they must have loved it. They must have loved seeing their mate.
I was pretty lucky for a young age. I got involved in like the districts and Lothian schools and like Scotland under 18s and all that really, really young, like for a young age. And like people were always saying that I could go further and do this and that. But I was going to say I didn't really believe it, but I wanted it that so much. It's like I did believe it. I think my mates were all happy. When I was younger, it was just such a. Do you know what I mean? Like Scott Murray had went pro, and he played for PL for a bit. He went away down to Bedford and stuff, and people were talking about me a lot in East Lothian, and I was playing in the third division at Preston Lodge, and like I signed full time for Edinburgh from there. It was quite funny. I was like, one season I was in the third division playing against Peebles and Kirkcaldy. And then like 12 months later, I was like playing against like internationals all over the place, Welsh and Irish internationals every week. It was mental.
And how different is it? Like you now, that's not going to happen now because you go into an academy and you've played quite a few years of senior rugby. Like how different did you find packing doing at Beveridge Park against Kirkcaldy and then 12 months later packing doing against an international prop forward?
I'll tell you, I'll be honest with you here, right? See that last year I played for PL. I think I was like 18 going on 19, right? See the third division at the time. Like at Kirkcaldy, you had like Danny Herrington and Willie Anderson. At Peebles, you had like Stevie Ferguson. Like all these guys were like Scotland Day and like Scotland development players, and I was just young. Like I was getting my head shoved up my arse almost on a weekly basis. So, like I don't know if this is going to sound right, but it was actually scrummaging was a bit easier when I started at Edinburgh than it was my last season at Preston Lodge.
And is that because you were having to do so much at Preston Lodge, and then when you're at Edinburgh, the whole pack scrummaging, and you've got a hooker that can scrummage, and you've got a big second row behind you?
I mean, there's obviously a massive difference physically wise in the size of guys and the strength of guys. It maybe didn't sound right there. I mean, my first season was really tough, it was, but it was a big jump for the third division fitness-wise and stuff like that. I remember my first day at Edinburgh, and I finished my apprenticeship on the Friday as a plumber, and then I started training on the Monday, and it was like the first day pre-season with Edinburgh. And I think we're doing like 100 metre back-to-backs. I was never built for like 100 repeats. And I think I got through like 7 or 8 of them. And I was just like broken. I was like, what am I doing here? What am I doing here? How am I going to survive this? So it ended up all right. I think there was only one person worse than me that day. And I think it was actually Kev Utterson. He was just back. He was just back for a 2-week stag do or something in Magaluf. So he, luckily, he was behind me.
Kev likes a social, doesn't he?
I think he'd. It was his first day as well. It was a few of us all started that day, but went pro that day. Me, Kev, Stevie Scott.
So you finish your apprenticeship. Was that part of the plan, or is that just how it worked? Like, were you determined that you were going to finish your apprenticeship before you signed, or did it all just fall into place?
I actually went down to Bath the year before, right? Just after they won the European Cup. And they wanted me to go down there and finish my apprenticeship. And I was like dying. I was just desperate for anything rugby all the time. And everyone was saying to me, just stay and finish your apprenticeship and Edinburgh will sign you. And then, like, I played that next season at PL, finished my apprenticeship. But it was just kind of at the last minute I actually got signed. Like, Peter Wright, I think his knee got screwed and he was, like, out of the game. So there's like, an opening for a prop. And then Ian Rankin was under 21. He'd been my manager and head coach at Scotland under 21s, and he was in charge of Edinburgh at the time. He just phoned me, told me to come in. And it, like, put me in a cupboard at Murrayfield and said, "Do you want a contract?" I said, "Aye."
So how did you end up at Bath? Because you've not got an agent at this point. You're just playing rugby and being chunked.
No, I was 17. I was playing for the first at PL. Remember, PL used to do like the big tens tournament.
Yeah, I played in the final against Northampton.
Well, it might have been that year, mate. Northampton were there, Sale, but there was a scout for Bath called Brian Robson, I think his name was. He was like an old school long term scout guy for Bath. So he just seen me that day, and then they came up to me after it and says, "Do you want to come down?" For a week trial. I was like, "Nah, I'm busy." Then ran down day one. So I went in there and I played a couple of games for like their combination teams. Like, I don't know if you knew what it was like back then, but they had like loads of smaller clubs in the town, and they were like, they're sort of almost like all feeder clubs. So I played a game on the Friday for Coombe Down against Wimbledon. And the guys down there, like, they were just absolute cider monsters. So Brian Robson said to me, he's like, "Have a good time with the guys and that, but don't go out with them." So I managed to just have a few and go back to the hotel. And I was happy with that. And then the midweek, like, Bath had just won the European Cup. So I played, there's a team between Bath and Gloucester called, I think it was Canesham. So the Bath European Cup winning squad were like playing Canesham midweek in a sort of like bounce game, if you like, pre-season. And bear in mind, I'm 17 playing for the first at PL, thinking, how am I actually in the first at PL? I've still got 2 years in under 18s. And then the next thing, I'm like down there playing against like the European champions. It was just unbelievable, eh? So as I say, after that, they wanted me to go down and finish my apprenticeship down there, but I stayed up, which was definitely the right thing to do. And
do you ever think about what might have happened if you'd gone to Bath? Because life could have been really different.
Nah.
That, never thought of it. You might have been playing for England.
I honestly think everything goes the way it's meant to go. I went full time Edinburgh, like, sort of 3-4 months into the season, Ranks actually left. Bob Eason took over as head coach. He'd been my under 18 coach, and he put me straight in every week at like 20. And by the end of that season, I was lucky. I got into a Scotland A game, and then like that June, I was like in New Zealand with the full squad.
And did you like? Did you think this is ridiculous, or were you just?
It was ridiculous,
with...
mate. I was in the third division. I was in the third division. I was in the third division like one June. The following June, I was at Eden Park. I was sitting at Eden Park beside Lomu at after match function.
Right. Oh, hold the bus there. Hold the bus there. What happened to you, John Lomu, at an after match function?
Nothing.
What did you talk to him about?
Nothing. I was just looking at him. I couldn't believe it. I used to sit and play. I was like, at the time, we were
right, here's a newsflash for you. Here's a newsflash for you. He was sitting looking at you and he couldn't believe it.
We were all sitting every night playing the Lomu on the PlayStation for 2 years leading up to this. Everyone was addicted to Rugby World Cup 95, John Aluma Rugby. And then, like, that's how all that kind of panned out. Like, third division, signed by Edinburgh, sitting at Eden Park with John Aluma, all within 12 months.
Had you been anywhere? Like, you'd obviously been age group stuff, so where had you been with rugby up till that point?
I'd been in the under 18s and the 21s. I'd been like right through that system. I played something like 20 games for the Scotland under 21s, and I was 2 or 3 years in the under 18 set up. So I'd been around a bit. But that was all right round about the time it all went professional, like 95, 96, 97. We were like the youth teams all, if you like. So it was just the whole thing, the whole way it panned out was just unbelievable.
So when you go into a Scotland squad, you already know some of the players because you've been through age group with them. You've played with them at Edinburgh. How different was it though to the other squads you'd been in, or was it just I'm in a rugby squad with other boys and we're playing rugby? Was it no different to you?
What, with Scotland?
Aye.
When I first got in, no, I was bricking it. I didn't really know anybody. I think the only person I'd kind of came up with that was on that tour was Chris Patterson. I played with him a couple of years in the 21s. But it was all like seasoned pros, you know. It was all like just like Sheely, like, you know, just all the internationals. It was just like, I was just like, how am I here? Like,
so you did have that. Like, you were saying, like, what am I doing here? You must have realised that you were good.
Oh, it must have been. I think I was all right at the time, but it was just all a bit of a shock the way it all happened. It wasn't a shock. I just mean it was like, it all happened pretty quick.
When you were with Scotland, like you've just said about sitting next to John Aluma, like that's a big deal for anybody. I don't care who you are, sitting with John Aluma is a big deal. Was there anybody with Scotland that you thought, like, that's class, I'm in the same squad as him?
All of them. Everybody.
And you and Mossy are pretty different beasts. You and Mossy approach the game slightly differently, I think is the polite way to put it. What was it like when you were away on tour? Did you just love that environment?
Aye, definitely. Back then, tours were like, I think that New Zealand tour was 6 weeks. I actually came home unbeaten for that tour now that I think about it. I played all the midweek games. But it was 6 weeks and you were like, it was kind of set up differently back then. There was the Dutch trackers and then the Saturday team basically, right? So we'd play on a Tuesday or Wednesday night. And then be holding bags cannon fodder for the full team getting ready for the Saturday. It was just a continuous cycle of that for 6 weeks. So the dirt trackers basically never got like the day off after a game or anything like that. You were holding bags. And I mean, the tours were brilliant back then. It was amazing. You'd go to so many different places as well. Like even the mid-2000s to late-2000s, when we're going on tour, you just sort of go somewhere, play a couple of tests, sometimes in the same place. When we're in Argentina away in 2010, we dotted about a bit. But like New Zealand, we were in like 8 places in 6 weeks, something like that. It was amazing. Seeing a good bit of the country.
Are you glad there was no social media then?
It was probably a good thing, that.
What was it like going to somewhere like Argentina? I mean, I've never been. I'd love to go, and especially for rugby, because we spoke about football before. Everybody thinks Argentina football, but the rugby's huge, and the fans are crazy, aren't they?
Oh, they love it across there. I mean, I can't remember where all the tests were. One was Tucumán. I remember Tucumán was like crazy. Like the fans were mental. It was like, it reminded me a few times like when we were playing in the south of France, like European Cup games. It's like you're running out onto the pitch and there's like a sort of cage over your head. And you're thinking in the warm-up, why is that cage there? As you're running out in the warm-up, and you go back in and you come out for the game, and there's like bottles bouncing off the cage.
Like being back at the penny pit.
It was a bit. It's like a PL muscle for a derby.
Well, how did you find being the boy for PL and those Scotland squads? Because I was never anywhere close to what you were. But when I joined those squads, I loved that. I loved meeting boys for other schools or boys for other clubs and, you know, teams you'd never played against because you didn't travel way up north or maybe through the west. Did you love that social bit of getting to know people for other places?
Aye, definitely. It was like, that's the great thing about rugby, like meeting guys and training with guys and like playing with guys straight away. It's like you get this instant sort of bond thing, you know what I mean? And like, I can remember even going back to like Edinburgh under 16s, 18s and that. And you knew some of the guys, you know, you'd done your squad sessions and that, went out for a few pints to Bertie's, get to know boys. And I think that's the thing I love most about rugby and like the touring and the away games and that. It's like the camaraderie, the nights out, the laughs, all that stuff. You know, it's a serious game. It was always a serious game, but I think some of the best things I was involved with were like on tours and like away games and that, when guys, like that's when guys really got close, and like wasn't all about drinking, like, you know, they're just going out during the week for meals, a couple of pints, like having good fun.
You must have had a lot of roommates in over the course of your career.
I had a few. I think by the end of it though, there was only be a few guys that would want to room with me because like my snoring. Apparently I was a bad snorer. I still don't believe it.
So how does it work? Do you pick your roommates or does the coach, who decides?
There was all different ways it was done by different coaches, different teams. Like at Edinburgh for years, when Lindsay was a team manager, she would do it on like a rotation thing, but she'd always put me and Scott McLeod together.
Oh, no.
That was it. My last year ago, I was always with Scott because it was like, see, when he fell asleep, it was like nobody could wake him up. So it was like with my snoring, it was like it wasn't a problem. There's guys waking up in the rooms next to me and like two doors down with my snoring, but Scott would still be asleep in the bed beside me.
I love Scotty McLeod. What a boy. Well, I can't imagine you two talking a lot about rugby though in that room.
No, I was actually speaking to him today. He was on about, he still talks about Nigel Jordans all the time.
Oh, what a boy. What he loved about, his basketball, eh?
Aye, he loves it.
He's a big poser too.
Did you ever see his Jordan tattoos?
No.
Have you seen his tattoo? Like his, you seen his sleeves he's got?
Yeah. Well, has he got Jordan in there?
He just used to have like a Jordan motif there and one there, like on each arm.
But he was a player though, eh? Scotty was a basketballer. I remember being in South Squad sessions with him, and he wouldn't wear rugby shorts, so we couldn't do line out. So somebody would have to swap shorts for him so he could get lifted in a line out at training.
He was unreal at basketball. He was unreal.
He loves his line outs.
He was some guy in the line out. Like, unbelievable. Quick.
So athletic.
Ah, he was.
What was he like in a scrum?
He was, honestly, he's one of the best guys I've ever had behind me, one of the strongest.
Really?
I say that to people. People are obsessed with the sort of gym strength and all that kind of stuff, but like it's massively important, don't get me wrong, but like some of the guys that I felt were the best scrummagers I had behind me, they're probably nowhere near the strongest, like physically. They just had this thing where they wanted to scrummage. You know, like the front row.
He's got that edge, though, isn't he? Scotty's a mongrel.
I'd always pull his hair as well, though. I'd just give his hair a wee tug.
He was sub player. I would love that. Would have been the brilliant documentary to have been in a room with you two.
I bet it was
a shambles. I can't imagine you two being neat and tidy.
I was all right. I think the real problem was waking us up. There was one time, right? I think it was a Rony. We were staying in Parma. We're getting beat at half time. We ended up winning. And we ended up, this is no lie, we ended up in a restaurant at 5 a.m. having a sit-down four-courser with what I think was like the local mafia or something like that. So they're giving us like drinks for each course. So we went back to the room at like half six for a half eight flight. And like, I'm snoring, he's comatose. I think the whole squad put a bang on the door to wake us up before they woke us up.
I love it.
There was some player.
Who did you room with when you were away with Scotland then?
It just depends. But the last few years I played for Scotland, we had rooms on our own, which... A lot of guys liked it at the time, and that caused a lot of problems as well, because some guys needed a roommate to like tell them what time meetings were, and like some guys were away with the fairies. Like,
see, there was me thinking you were going to say some guys needed like the emotional support or so, but no, it was just to tell them when the meetings are.
a lot of guys would go for their naps and things like that, and then just completely miss meetings. So it would cause having guys rooming on their own, it would cause a lot of other problems, you know what I mean, with timekeeping and angry coaches.
How did you get on with coaches?
Did I think? you maybe need to ask them.
You played with a lot of coaches. Edinburgh went through a lot. I mean, in your time at Edinburgh, you must have seen loads of coaches, because it was at one point it was like a revolving door.
I think there might have been more coaches than players.
Who were the coaches that you thought, I love working with this. I look forward to sessions. I like listening to their speeches. Who was that?
I think when I first started, I was just kind of in awe of everything. But like, because I'd had Bob, like through under-18s and that, and then him sort of giving me a shot as a pro and that sort of in the Welsh League, like I'll never forget that. And then Frank took over. And Frank just wanted to play this totally different way to everybody. And like this. And it was really exciting. Like the first sort of 2-3 years Frank was there. It was a kind of different ethos he was trying to get us to do. It was almost like he was a bit ahead of his time with what he was trying to do with us at Edinburgh. Everybody else started doing it sort of 3, 4, 5 years later. So that was a good period as well. And at that time as well, when Frank was there, like Todd Blackadder and Brendan had came across from New Zealand, Brendan Laney, Chainsaw, which was pretty surreal as well at the time. That was a good period. I remember sitting in my house watching it was like the MPC Cup final. And it was like Canterbury against Otago. And it was like Canterbury won, but I think Chainsaw was like man of the match. And it was like 4 months later they were like on the back pitches with us. It was just like how is this happening?
It was all crazy because they were massive name, like Todd Blackadder, massive name.
And like Todd was captain of All Blacks when I was at Eden, like that tour in the like at Eden Park. So like, see that after match, I said when I was sitting with Lomu, like Todd was up talking, and then it was like sort of 18 months later, he was like playing, he was like our captain.
Like, what was that like? I mean, we've in Scotland we've got this thing with the All Blacks. Like, we know them all. We know All Black players like we know Scotland players because Scotland and New Zealand have always had that relationship. But they're just so good. So Todd Blackadder walks in. Like, to me, that's like movie stuff. Like that's comic book stuff. That this hero's walked in to play club rugby. In Scotland, it just feels mad.
It was. It literally was.
How did he present himself? Because those first impressions, he must know they're looking at me thinking that's Todd Blackadder, which probably puts a bit of pressure on him. What was it like when he first came? Because Brendan Laney got a hard time because he arrived and went straight into the Scotland team, whereas yeah. Todd Blackadder's one that's really thought of still really highly.
Do you know what? When Todd came in, I can't remember the complete details of it, but it wasn't pre-season. It was like a bit into the season. So Burnsy was the captain. And Todd just came in and just started training like an animal. He wasn't saying anything, he wasn't saying much. He was just like an animal. So it was like he didn't come in and like you kind of expect in that situation and start like mouthing off, telling people what to do and everything. He made everybody respect him first. Like he didn't, like everybody did respect him, don't get me wrong, but it was like he wanted to prove himself first. That's what I thought was so unbelievable about him. And it was like, you know what I mean? It was like captain of the best team in the world. And he's just like going through training like everybody else.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Not saying anything. And he probably done that for about a month, 6 weeks. Just like grafted and like showed guys how it was done. I mean, he was always going to be the captain and like take over and do what he did. But like, I don't know, the way he done it was just like a different league, I think, to a lot of guys. The way that we did done it, and like,
did the standard go up? Did he lift this? Like, did others start training better, smarter, harder because Todd Blackadder was next to him?
I could tell you a few stories. It started doing like extras after training, like every day. So it was like shuttles, 100 meters, 50 returns, whatever. And it was always like on the line. So up until that point, whenever like you were doing, guys were doing fitness or extra fitness, guys would be always cutting corners, like turning around like a meter before the line, like on the deck up, like he would go crazy. If he caught anybody, he would be going crazy at them, make guys do even more. And about anybody was late, I remember Andrew Kelly being late when he was just at the school for a fitness session. And Todd basically just, it made us all just run and run and run. Ned got like carried like a Oxford, like a guy each arm with his toes like dragging behind him off the back pitches at Merkey. It was never ever late again. Ever. I remember Matt Day once as well said something stupid to him at pre-season down at Gullin Beach when he was just young. I think Matt said something like, it was real interested to see how far he could push his body. I just remember us all walking off the beach after like one of the hardest sessions you could imagine, and we were all turning around and looking, and Todd and Matt, it was like he was just making Matt go up and down Murder Hill with him, just over and over. This is after 2.5 hours of like the hardest training you've ever done. And I think Ted slept at Murder Hill that night. I think he had to sleep there. But aye, Todd changed the game at Edinburgh. And Chainsaw as well. Chainsaw was like, he was just
a brilliant boy. He was a great boy.
He got slated to death, like for sort of parachuting into the Scotland team, but it was absolutely unbelievable for Edinburgh. Like the time he was here, it was unreal. Like if you can get a highlight reel somewhere of what Buffa done at Edinburgh, it's like it'd be up there with anybody.
And how did the players like receive that? Were they, because he was getting hammered, like the fans were going nuts. I think Scottish Rugby at the time had a chat room that folk were just ripping into. But what were the players just quite happy? He was a mate. He was working hard. Did you used to accept him like anybody else?
I mean that was the first time something like that had really happened. Like a foreigner, if you like, or whatever you want to call it, coming in and doing that. Like the way it was done, the way it was handled. So it's quite hard for the guys involved, but I mean Brendan done so much at Edinburgh. I've never have a bad word to say about him.
What young
backs at Edinburgh learned off him? Nobody, they wouldn't have learned off anybody else at the time. Even a lot of the coaches, the stuff like Brendan knew, like how what to do, how to run a back line, like the way he wanted to attack, it's just unreal.
Did you love that? Did you love learning off other folk? It sounds like you were not really. you were out there all the time, but you like you've spoken about quite a lot of things there. Like you. There's that image that Chunk just played in Happy Go Lucky, thing, but you're a smart operator. You're a switched on guy. You've obviously taken quite a lot in. Did you enjoy that bit of it, or were you just at the time focusing on yourself?
No, I did enjoy it, and like I was so lucky over the years, mate, with the people I crossed paths with at the right time. Like what I'm saying, like getting into the Scotland team, then like guys like Todd and that come in, and then like it was just like it just kind of kept happening to me. And then it was like as I got into my sort of mid-20s, and I maybe was like stalling a bit, and it was like maybe I wasn't the scrummager I could have been. I went in one morning and it was like Massimo was there standing in the car park. And it was like nobody even really said anything about it. And like, I had like two posters on my wall when I was a kid, David Soul and Massimo. So it was like, I kind of got into my head that summer, I'm needing to work a bit more on my scrummaging if I'm wanting to like get into the Scotland team all the time and that. And then it was the next thing, Massimo just appeared. And then it was like, and then he was just like with me 24/7 teaching me about scrummaging and like mentality, aggression, like everything to do with the scrum. And up until that point, we'd spent a few years trying to do all this expansive stuff with Frank. And that was great. That was brilliant. But like, Massimo changed everything, like the attitude about like scrummaging in Scotland.
When he came in, so somebody like that comes in, right, and everybody that worked with him spoke so highly of him and loved him. And some of that was because of his knowledge and how he helped them get better, but some of it was him as a person.
Yeah.
Before he was there, did you think, was there ever a point where you thought, like how much more can I learn? Like I must know everything by now, or did you always have that desire to learn more as you were going through your career?
No, I think always wanted to learn. And like, don't get me wrong, like I was around good forwards coaches and all, everything up until then. Like I worked with Eddie a lot when I was like a teenager, Eddie Pollock, and like Henry was great with me at Edinburgh in the early days and that as well. But like, Massimo just like had the scrummaging thing on a different level, not just to anybody in Scotland, I think to anybody in the world. And like, it was just like I crossed paths with him at exactly the right time. And it was like, I don't know, it was just, I just feel lucky. And like, as you say, everybody loved him, but the way he was, it wasn't just that he was technically a great coach, it was like he was a mentor, he mentored boys. I don't think I really realized at the time, but now that I think back, it was like it was that guy's 24/7. But he wasn't just like talking about rugby and scrums and that. It was like he was always around guys, asking how they were, shaking everybody's hand. Like he had an angry streak in him if boys were pissing about and that. But it was like guys just respected him and listened to him and done what he said. He was a top coach.
Did you love scrumming? Like when, if it was a Tuesday scrummaging session, were you like, yes, this is it? Or was it really just a necessary thing you had to do?
Nah, this is where people have got it wrong. It's like everything else is kind of like, nothing else really actually matters. Everybody thinks it does, but like what I was trying to say earlier about South Africa, I guarantee you by the end of this tournament, it'll all come down to South Africa's scrum. Scrummaging folk. Like everything else will go out the window. It'll just be about taking on people up front. I know it's hard for backs to accept that, but that's just the way it is and it'll never ever change.
Would you, if you could have, right, if you weren't playing for Scotland, who would you have played for? Who would have been the country you would have played for?
Me.
If Denmark, maybe. If you could have played in a front row with anybody, who would it have been? Would you have been in a Springbok front row, knowing that they were massive, or would you have played in the All Black? Who would it have been?
Who would I have chose to play for?
Aye.
I don't know. Nobody. I want to play for Scotland, mate.
Nice. Right. We'll take
Argentina. Who did you... Argentina, maybe at the time. Like growing up watching Argentina.
See, that just proves that you do love scrummaging. If you say when you're our age and you say Argentina, that means you love scrummaging. Because at the time, that was them. That you're right. That was everything. That was what they did. Was scrummage.
The 80s and 90s watching them.
So what was it like scrummaging against them in Argentina?
It was fun. No, it was hard. It was hard, but we done well. I mean, they were tough. They were tough, tough games. We played four tests in 2 years over there and won three of them. I don't think we'd ever won a test over there. They were hard, hard games, but like, it was up front they were won. It's in the scrum, mate. The backs could never have won their games, mate.
And then you and Jim Hamilton go out on the Randan in Buenos Aires, was it?
I don't know what Jim was doing. I was just against some protein powder.
What was the story you told me on Sunday?
About the roundabout?
Yeah.
I was walking across the roundabout with an 8-foot by 4-foot glass door. I'm not exactly sure what he was doing, like, to this day I don't know.
So Jim Hammond just said he was busy.
That was it. I asked him what he was doing. I said, Do you want to go to the chippy? And he said, no, I'm busy.
Well, he's 8 by 4 foot door.
For the front of the Hilton, aye.
I love that, because he's dined out on quite a lot of chunk stories. So I'm glad that we got in the door on the roundabout story with Jim. Some boy. Who do you miss? What sort of team room do you miss? What players were the ones that made you laugh or kept you entertained?
Now that's hard, man. I played that long with that many guys, but like me and Jim used to have a laugh. Me, Jim, and Scott McLeod. It was just like a constant laugh. Eh? It wasn't just a laugh, but like they guys were funny, man. Funny guys. And like sometimes you just needed that, even like when you were away and that a lot and traveling all the time. It was like, and I'll tell you, Mossy was funny as well. Like Mossy was funny on a tour. I mind one time he hid in like a full size, like a walk in fridge in Canada somewhere. So like Stuart, they used to put. Like all the usual suspects would be doing for the toast, like late at night, like 10 o'clock at night. And Stuart Barton was one of the worst. He'd come down and he'd shovel up all the bread and like all the jam for the fridge. So one night, Mossy hid in the fridge with the jam, like the walk-in fridge. Barty walked in and opened the door to get his jam. And Mossy just jumped out on him. It was so funny.
Mossy plays this straight lace on TV and working for Scottish Rugby and everything, but everybody that knows him knows he's an absolute pest.
Oh, Mossy is a funny guy.
Absolute man. Barty, what a great boy Barty is.
Yeah, Barty's a brilliant physio as well. Like, unbelievable. But they guys used to work their socks off, eh, Barty? Much of all you guys.
What was your relationship like with the strength and conditioning teams?
All right, huh? I struggled a lot early on, I was never a big runner, like down and up shuttles and that, fine, but there was a period, man, when it all came down to like your 3K times and all this stuff, and I just couldn't operate like that. I improved it and stuff. You know, when things actually really changed for me, fitness wise, Mark Bitcoin came in, right? He'd been all over the place, like Wigan Warriors. He'd been across in the NFL, doing all like loads of, and then like. He went back to Wigan, ended up Olympic. He's done so much stuff. Like, he was amazing. Man City. And, like, he came in and, like, he said, like, didn't I get this wrong? Like, I got all my fitness coaches and I got stuff for everybody and, like, I improved bits and bobs from them all. But, like, what he said to me is, he says, I'm not going to compare you to anybody. So I'm not going to compare this time of yours to his time. He says, I just want you to beat your times all the time. Like, every month, I want that to get a bit better, that to get a bit better, I want that to get a bit better. And it was like, instead of me continuously, like, trying to beat guys that were, like, so much aerobically fitter than me, where I was never ever going to get there unless I just stopped playing rugby and concentrated on the running, which was never going to happen. I just improved. He just had me improve beating myself. So every time I was training then, I was trying to beat myself, not the guys who were so much fitter than me. And like gradually over time, I just started getting closer and closer and closer to them. It was just like a mindset thing. Like he hit me with, and it was like it changed everything for me. Like
that's smart though. Yeah, that's a good way to go, because you could have got pretty down when you're always comparing yourself to somebody else. Whereas
I was.
And that, but if you were passing that on to a young player, I didn't get picked, he's this, that. Yeah, but just make yourself a lot better. Like, that's pretty much what you're saying. If you just focus on you and get as good as you can be.
Exactly.
That's it, mate.
100%. 100%.
Would you go into coaching?
Oh, I don't know. I'm getting on a bit now. Maybe... I mean, I want to do something. I'm just not exactly sure, like what it'll be yet. But I feel like I need to give something, like, you know, the stuff that was kind of passed to me by Massimo and like guys like Tom Smith as well. It's like I feel like I need to like sort of pass it down a bit, but I just don't know where exactly yet and how.
I've got a brilliant idea. Chunk does prop star.
Prop star.
Prop star, you could do a scrummaging clip. It could be like a 6-week series, and at the end of every week, you eliminate somebody, and then the prop at the end of it gets a contract with Edinburgh.
Sounds all right. Sounds all right.
Let's get on Channel 5. Junkies prop star. I love it. Yeah, but there must be heaps of knowledge in there for you to pass on, even if it doesn't necessarily have to be as a coach, but as a scrum technician. You'd be class at that.
I mean, the game changes in that. The game's changed since I stopped playing. Like, the year I stopped playing was the last year there was hits in the scrums. So, like, scrummaging and all that's changed a lot. But, like, over the whole time I was playing, a lot of the stuff changed. But, like, there's basics in scrummaging, and there's things you can't hide of. And the things Massimo used to go on about a lot of the time, which, like, I didn't actually realise it as much. And Tom used to talk about it as well. Tom used to sit a lot and talk about emotion, right? Emotion is scrummaging and all that, right? Massimo was the same about aggression and your mentality and, like, wanting to die in every scrum and, like, and all that. And, like, it was almost like a lot of guys, and, like, even myself at some points, I didn't actually completely realise what they were talking about until I was finished and looked back on it all. And it was, like, the bottom line is, and you can see it. You can see it in games. You see it in games when, like, guys, maybe have like a great dominant scrum, and then other times they won't. You can't understand why. It's like it's a sort of 8-man emotional mentality. That's what it is. Aggression. And like Tom and Massimo, they used to go on and on and on about it. And it's like I think it's a hard thing to accept. See, when you're playing, and you're thinking you're doing it all the time, but you're actually not. But you can see when you can't. You can actually see when you are doing it. I think that's one of the biggest things that, like, that guys can realize. Yeah, guys can learn.
Geez, you got two of the absolute best there, and you're right. Because, well, it's the same with Ennis, same with goal kicking. Always kicked it every time, but he missed that one. What happened? We know he can kick, but it was the. It was the emotion of that moment that, for some reason, pulled it wide, or, you know, a line out throw, any of those things. It's brilliant hearing you talking like that. Talk me through the hit. I mean, that, you're right. I mean, that was, like, that's bonkers, Chunk. You were right in that. Seven plus you hammering into eight of them. Like, how did you prepare for that? How do you get ready for that? Because everyone in your brain should be saying, this is stupid. What am I doing?
That's the thing though, my brain was saying the opposite.
And there we've got a standoff and a props different view. That's what we've just heard.
It was just the way it always was. It's the way you grew up playing. It's the way it was. But I mean, they changed it because of all the sort of gamesmanship and the shenanigans that was going on, and the referees, you know. the referees couldn't deal with it. Like a referee can't stand and watch four props at the same time. It's impossible. So they took the hit away. But I kind of think they opened up another can of worms. So,
aye,
you know, the game, like the props have got, like, and I'm not saying they shouldn't, but the props have got a lot fitter, making a lot more tackles around the pitch a lot more. So there's less space, more impacts, more collisions, more people getting hurt. It's like the thing I loved about rugby was there was a place for everybody. Like, you didn't get the wee chunky props anymore, like the shorter, stocky guys, because there's no hit. Because you could, like, shorter guys, look at the guys that Tom took on, like, monsters. Like, that doesn't happen. It doesn't happen now because there's no hit. So there was a knock on it taking the hit out of the game.
No, I'm way there about the place for everybody because I'm not convinced it's still there. Scrummaging, like whenever I see a referee blow the whistle and put his arm in the air at a scrum, I always think, how have you done that? Like, what have you seen that? And there is now like the bind slipping and so, but you must have loved playing with certain refs because you knew they didn't have a clue what they were doing or you were getting away with it, and you must have had some chirps with referees.
That's what I'm saying. It became like a big, like this, the gamesmanship in the scrum was just like, it was getting ridiculous. And it was like, you know, guys would get a reputation for doing this, and then it was like, it didn't matter what they'd done, it was like, he was getting the blame of that, and he was getting the blame of that. It was like, what was actually happening went out the window. Everybody was pre-thinking stuff and pre-deciding stuff. But I just did what I did, mate.
There must have been some chat in some of the front rows. Who would give out a little bit of chirp in the front row? Did you speak to your opposite man, or did you just do it physically?
It depends what they were. If they were being a bit lippy, I wouldn't say I was lippy, but if some guys were like getting a bit wide. I don't know. Do you know who I remember has been shocked at how like much chat they had was Richard Cockrell. We played Leicester in I don't know what year it was. We played them in a warm-up game, and I just couldn't believe the banter he was coming out with, just like angry. Who else? Mark Regan was always funny as well. I don't know. It's just part of the game, eh? I enjoyed it all.
Of course you did. Murrayfield, I didn't get to play at Murrayfield. You got to come out there, full stadium. You know, you got some great results. You had some tough times, but you had some great. What's it like playing in front of? Because as a kid, you went, you watched, you were like, that's the dream, isn't it? You didn't pretend that you're, well, maybe you did pretend you were playing at the Penny Pit, but any Scottish kid, the imagination is, I'm playing at Murrayfield. And then you got to do it. You got to sing the national anthem. You know, you got to celebrate in the changing room. What's match day like at Murrayfield?
Mate, it's just like it's the first few times you do it. I can't hardly remember the first time. Like, it was just like so emotional, like being there. Like, after all the years, like, thinking about it and dreaming about it. But, like, the best thing you can imagine, like, the thing you're always wanting to do, and, like, getting to do it over and over again, maybe sometimes it's like you get used to it and you maybe didn't appreciate it at the time as much as what you should have. I think that's probably being honest. But, like, when I look back now, I'm like, I drive about Edinburgh a lot in the van and that, and I was like, sometimes I'll drive close to the stadium, I'll look at it and I'll be like, I've played there 40 times for Scotland, something like that. I'm like, how the hell did that happen?
it must be class. And you said when you stopped playing that you didn't really say fall in love with it, but it wasn't the most important thing, and now you're getting back into it. Do you think you needed that time?
I think a lot of guys, when they finish up, some guys like stay involved straight away, go doing the sort of professional coaching thing and all that, and that's great. But like I knew that really wasn't for me at the time. So it's like I went back sort of into the building trade. Like I knew that was going to be my sort of route, if you like. So it was like rugby in my head just went right to the, for being like at the front of the queue, it just went like right to the back. And a lot of other stuff was going on in my life. And rugby was just like nowhere near like a priority. And then over time, it was like I almost forgot about it. And I didn't realise until years and years later how much I actually missed it all. Until I started going to the odd game and that here and there, like a few years ago. It was just like, you lose touch with everybody as well, you know what I mean? Like all the guys, you lose touch with everyone. So yeah, I'm just enjoying getting back involved and seeing guys and going to games and like talking to guys again, having a laugh.
One of our favourite chunk bits. Remember when you did the ball presentation at Edinburgh? Uh-huh. And it was what game? It was a European game, wasn't it? And they were on.
Or Munster.
Was it? No, it was Munster. It was it semi final of the whatever it was at the time? Pro 12. And you went on with the ball, and then at half time, I was supposed to do an interview with you. And Nibdy could find Chunk, and it was like, "Where's Chunk?" I'm standing with the microphone, and they're in my ear going, "Have we got Chunk here? Have we got?" I said, "I don't know where he is. He's never shown up." But you were at the back in the queue for a beer at half time.
I think I was just thirsty, mate.
Where's Chunk? I love that. Chunk, Scotland International. He's just delivered the ball, and he's still got to go in queue for a beer at half time. That was just priceless. But anyway, I loved seeing, like, on Sunday we were there and you got to see Graham Morrison again. You've not seen him for however long. Within about 30 seconds, you were right back into just being two daft rugby laddies.
I'm not seeing G-Dog for a while. That's what I was saying. It's like, you train and play with these guys, for years and years and years, and, like, you know, you're basically living the guys. And then, like what you say, you don't see them and then you see them, but it's just like you just go straight back to like that time, if you like. Sort of forget. It's like I was forgetting on Sunday. It's like I'm 45 now, nearly. Felt like I was like 25 again, down in pints on the stage. Like, what's going on? We've got work tomorrow.
it was class seeing you. I love that you're back into it. If you go back to one game or one stadium or one changing room, what would it be? So the thing I'm, like you've said about being on tour now, the thing I miss is the changing room. And I didn't mean the changing room now that's got the social media guy in the corner and the TV cameras. I mean the doors closed and it's just you lot in a changing room. I miss that massively. Is there a moment, like Johnny Wilkinson talks about he would love to be in the World Cup final again with 15 seconds to go. He doesn't want to be at the celebration. He wants to be in that moment. Is there a moment that everyone was just sweet for you?
Do you know what I love the best is like, you see at the end of the games, like the last minute or something, when you've been in an absolute war and it's like, you're about to win, but you're not quite sure. And then the whistle goes. It's like, that's the best feeling ever. Like, you can't get it anywhere. Nowhere. You'll never find it anywhere. Like when you've like been in an absolute battle, and then the whistle goes. That's the bit I miss the most. Like
just that feeling, that
we did just it.
Release. Class, Chunk. Listen, we've done an hour. You have to come back, and we're gonna have to do another one sometime. Now, I did tell you you're going to do this, and I really want to know what happens here. So at the end of this, I ask people to finish the sentence. So, Chunk, for you, happiness is?
Repeated 5-metre scrums.
I love it. Chunk, thank you. loved it. Enjoy your holiday. See you soon, my man.
Cheers, mate. I'll catch you later.
Love it. How good was that? I've absolutely loved that. I've laughed and I've smiled, and it's an hour and it feels like it took about 20 minutes. That was Alan Chunk Jacobson, former Scotland international prop forward. You can watch on Facebook and YouTube. You can listen on Apple, Acast, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Please tune in, tell your friends, leave us a review, and hopefully you'll be back for more. In the meantime, my name is Bruce Aitchison from the Happiness Is podcast, and my happiness is egg-shaped. Look after yourself, and I'll see you all again very, very soon.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to Quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.